Hello, this is Sharon. Welcome to the Pantograph for today, Wednesday, July 22nd, 2026. As always, we begin on the front page. This is an article entitled Weather: Work Smarter to Beat the Heat. Outdoor workers offer tips for staying safe on the job. A few weeks ago, a crew member at Penn Landscaping came close to experiencing a heat stroke. He locked up, landscaper Lucas Spires said, recalling the incident while working in downtown Bloomington. The experience served as a reminder of the risks that come with working in extreme heat. For Spires and other outdoor workers, rising temperatures don't bring operations to a halt. Instead, high heat means adapting and approaching work with greater preparation. Ryan Wilson, who works alongside Spires at Penn Landscaping, said the heat this year has felt unusually intense. We don't know if it's kind of that initial shock factor, but it definitely feels hot, especially this week and the past couple of weeks, Wilson said. Penn Landscaping provides crew members with refillable water jugs, ice, and cooling towels. Wilson said he stays hydrated by drinking at least a gallon of water each day and uses electrolyte packets and popsicles to stay replenished. After a long day, a cool shower helps bring his body temperature back down, he said. Wilson said the most challenging part of the day comes between 1 and 3 p.m., when temperatures are typically at their highest. He said crew members often check in with each other to stay safe in the heat. You never know, Wilson said. You could be feeling fine and another guy out there could feel like he's about to pass out. Larry Chupp, a crew member for Zimmerman Enterprises, a Goodfield-based construction site labor company, said the recent heat has definitely slowed them down. For him, the mental challenge of working in extreme heat is often the toughest to overcome. But once you get through it, and you get going, and you get hydrated, eventually, the day's over and the work's done, and you feel really good about yourself, Chupp said, when working in downtown Bloomington. To prepare for the heat, Chupp said he drinks at least a gallon of water a day, eats fruits and vegetables, takes cold showers, and incorporates garlic into his diet to increase immunity. Chupp said Zimmerman Enterprises gives workers flexibility to take additional breaks or leave early when the heat becomes overwhelming. He said supervisors understand that allowing workers time to recover is essential for keeping employees safe. In a June 29th press release, the McLean County Health Department warned that prolonged exposure to heat can lead to dehydration, heat exhaustion, and in severe cases, heat stroke. The department advised in the release that residents drink water regularly, take breaks from strenuous activity, seek shade or air conditioning when possible, and check in on those who may be more vulnerable to extreme heat. These precautions are especially important for youth programs where staff must keep children active outdoors while protecting them from the risks of extreme heat. Jill Iklaus oversees Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department's Summer Day Camp, an entirely outdoor program for children ages 6 to 11 that began in June. The camp features activities such as arts and crafts, games, swimming, and more. As temperatures and humidity rise, she said the program follows the department's heat guidelines, which emphasize hydration, regular breaks, and limiting the time spent in direct sunlight. We try to be pretty diligent about making sure that water is available, refills are available, and that the kids are actually taking the time to drink it and not just telling you they are. Counselors also watch for signs of heat stress, including sluggishness, fatigue, and flushed skin. When outdoor conditions become more challenging, the staff will often try to shorten or modify activities before fully canceling them. When deciding whether to move activities indoors or cancel them, the department considers factors including temperature, heat index, and the length of the activity. ICLOS said heat-related cancellations are rare, but modifications become more common as temperatures rise. So far this summer, she said the department has not had to cancel programs because of heat. "We just try and make decisions on a case-by-case basis," she said. "We have to be smart about it." And here are some facts about heat-related illnesses. Heat exhaustion, the symptoms include dizziness, thirst, heavy sweating, nausea, and weakness. What to do? Move to a cooler area, loosen clothing, sip cool water, and seek medical help if the symptoms don't improve. For heat stroke, the symptoms include confusion, dizziness, and unconsciousness. What to do? Call 911. Move the person to a cooler area, loosen clothing and remove extra layers, and cool them with water or ice. Normal. Uptown station rules adopted. Conduct code called hostile to the homeless. The Normal Town Council adopted an expanded code of conduct for Uptown Station on Monday after rejecting a 2-week delay requested by homeless service providers and several council members. The ordinance limits the time someone may spend in Uptown Station other than waiting for trains or buses, and some behaviors such as sleeping and bathing. Supporters said the measure limits disruption of the facility's role as a transportation hub and town government center. Critics call it an unfair restriction targeting homeless people. The council voted 5-2 to approve the ordinance, with council members Karen Smith, Kevin McCarthy, Scott Preston, Andy Byers, and Mayor Chris Coos voting in favor. Council members Kathleen Lorenz and Rory Roarbridge voted against it. Lorenz first moved to table the ordinance for 2 weeks to allow the town to consult service providers and review possible legal concerns from the American Civil Liberties Union. The vote followed a lengthy public comment period in which people with experience of homelessness, service providers, and other residents urged the council to pause or reject the proposal. Most of the attendees who had come to address the ordinance stood and left the council chambers after the final vote, some voicing frustration as the council moved to its next agenda item. The tension had surfaced earlier as Smith defended the proposal, and several people called out from the audience during her remarks, prompting Coos to stop the discussion and ask attendees not to interrupt council members. "These are tough issues, and I realize that," Coos said, "but please do not speak out and yell at the speaker whether you agree with them or not." One attendee left the chamber following the exchange. Nearly a dozen public speakers asked the council to reject or postpone the proposal, arguing that it had been drafted too quickly and without enough input from organizations that work directly with people experiencing homelessness. Matt Burgess, CEO of Home Sweet Home Ministries, called the revised code an overreaction and said it emphasizes escalating consequences rather than resolving why people are sleeping or spending extended periods at the station. The proposed revisions represent an overreaction to the current situation, Burgess said. Burgess said the bridge, a shelter village created and managed by Home Sweet Home Ministries on the south end of downtown Bloomington, is serving 54 people who otherwise might be outside. However, the community still lacks enough shelter and affordable housing to accommodate more individuals, he said. He asked the town to continue working with service providers on alternatives involving shelter, housing, mental health care, substance use treatment, and other assistance. Dave Bentlin, speaker for the Central Illinois chapter of the ACLU of Illinois, said the organization's legal staff in the Chicago branch was reviewing the ordinance and preparing a written response concerning the constitutionality of some provisions. Bentlin asked the council to delay action so the town could consider the ACLU's concerns before adopting the rules. Adam Lovell, the Salvation Army's Community Services Director and co-chair of the McLean County Housing Coalition, shared similar concerns and asked to continue working with the town on a plan for Uptown Station. Liam Wheeler, who said he has experienced homelessness and now works as the Continuum of Care Coordinator with the McLean County Center for Human Services, warned that pushing people away from central public locations can send them to more dangerous areas and increase distrust of service systems. When we are told we're no longer welcome in public spaces under any ordinance, it makes us feel like criminals, Wheeler said. Abigail Sample told the council she had experienced homelessness on and off for 9 years and had relied on Uptown Station during periods of extreme heat and cold. We are hurting, and we need to be seen without being hated and discriminated against, Sample said. Other speakers questioned what objective standards would prevent profiling, where people would be expected to go after being removed, and whether enforcement would resolve any underlying problems. City Manager Pam Reese said the town continues to have working relationships with both Home Sweet Home Ministries and the Salvation Army. The town staff is in regular contact with outreach workers and normally uses federal community development funding to support outreach and shelter improvements, she added. Smith said the ordinance responds to conduct rather than housing status. She described Uptown Station as a transportation hub, municipal building and business center that must remain accessible to travelers, employees, residents, and customers. Smith said the town must consider concerns involving camping, unattended property, blocked access, and disruptive conduct while also serving people who need help. Byers said many public concerns appeared to focus on how the ordinance might be enforced, rather than what its language expressly allows. He said the council would be responsible for ensuring that the rules are implemented as intended and do not become a means of criminalizing poverty or homelessness. McCarthy supported the ordinance but asked the town staff to arrange discussions with service agencies quickly. He also called for police and other personnel to make warm handoffs to available services before enforcement escalates. Lorenz, who works for Home Sweet Home Ministries, said the bridge is working but does not have enough space to meet the community's entire need. She said service providers were caught off guard by the ordinance and that the town should have used its existing relationships to seek their input before scheduling the vote. Roberge said the proposal had advanced quickly and that the council would benefit from additional guidance from people who work with homelessness every day. Koo said he had spoken with the ACLU of Illinois' executive director and that the organization's attorneys would continue discussing the ordinance with the town's legal staff. "This is not about the person or the condition," Koos said. "This is about the behavior." Koos said Normal could amend the ordinance later if legal analysis or conversations with service providers identify problems. He also defended Normal police officers, saying their first response generally is to help people and de-escalate situations. The ordinance replaces rules adopted in 2012 and divides Uptown Station into transit, parking, and city hall areas, according to town documents. A person generally may remain in each area while using it for its intended purpose, passing through to another authorized area or conducting other lawful business. Someone who remains in a transit area for more than 2 hours without boarding or leaving a bus or train, transferring between services, buying a ticket, accompanying a passenger, or waiting for scheduled service would be presumed to be there for a purpose unrelated to transit. The provision is not a strict 2-hour limit, and people could remain while waiting for delayed transportation, making a reasonable transfer, using public services, or conducting other authorized business. The ordinance does prohibit camping, sleeping, lying down, reclining, using bedding, or preparing to sleep in the station. A transit passenger could briefly doze while seated upright, provided the person does not use bedding, occupy more than one seat, or interfere with others. It also addresses unattended belongings, excessive occupation of seats or floor space, blocked entrances and accessible routes, bathing or washing clothing, disruptive noise, and refusal to follow lawful directions from facility personnel. Authorized town employees, contracted security personnel, and police officers could issue warnings, direct someone to move property, order someone to leave part of the building, issue citations, or impose written bans. The ordinance does not establish standard ban lengths or a maximum duration, and a person would have 5 business days to appeal a ban to the city manager or a designee. However, it ordinarily would remain in effect during the appeal. The town also could remove property that is unattended, abandoned, obstructing access, or creating a safety or sanitation concern. The ordinance continues to allow the town to designate portions of Uptown Station as a cooling, warming, or emergency respite center. Sleeping, lying down, using bedding, storing property, bathing, and laundering would remain prohibited during those periods unless the town changes the conditions. The code also states that enforcement may not be based solely on housing status, appearance, poverty, disability, or another protected status. This ordinance will take effect 10 days after publication. Bloomington, city looks at vape vending machines. The Bloomington City Council on Monday provided guidance for the city staff to draft ordinance language setting restrictions on the use of vape vending machines. Vape vending machines are automated retail devices that sell age-restricted products like disposable vape pens and nicotine pouches in businesses that are accessible only to people who are 21 or older. Most models require the customer to scan a government-issued identification or use a smartphone app to access them. Bloomington City Clerk Leslie Yoakum said that since last fall, the city has received contact from 7 vape vendors asking about the city's position on vape vending machines. Since the city does not have an ordinance that specifically regulates these machines, the staff relies on state statute to make determinations, she said. State law currently allows vape vending machines in liquor establishments where they are under the direct supervision and control of management. A local tobacco license is also required if a vendor wished to make the machines available. Statute also governs minimum age, ID verification, free samples, vending machine restrictions, remote sales of e-cigarettes, and retail licensing through the Illinois Department of Revenue. Based on a review of the law, the city determined that these machines would be allowable within taverns or restaurants that may have a room for video gambling. Grocery stores with their own space for selling liquor also were considered as eligible sites under state statute. We can draft some language and bring it to council, making it more clear as to where these can be located in an establishment, but not moving towards prohibiting them or anything like that, Yoakum said. When asked by Alderman Cody Hendricks whether the staff spoke with the municipalities that have prohibited vape vending machines, Yoakum said there were a couple of places that prohibited the machines, but a few limited their location to behind the bar or counter of an eligible establishment. Bloomington Mayor Dan Brady asked the council whether there was consensus for staff to present clarified language on the location of these machines. No council members objected. There was no formal vote because the meeting was a work session. Today's Flick Fact question. The Meyer store along East College is Bloomington Normal's largest retail store at 231,000 square feet. The 38 acres Meyer bought in 2004 to build it remains one of the most lucrative land sales in McLean County history. Do you know what Meyer paid for the land? And the answer, Meyer reportedly paid $4 million for the 38-acre former Garling Farm along College Avenue, more than $105,000 per acre. Until then, the land had been farmed by the late Herbert L. and Elizabeth Garling. And talk about capital gains. The Garlings bought the farm from the Dillon family in 1935 and paid about $57 an acre. From the past pages of the Pantograph, How Time Flies Locally. 100 years ago, on July 22, 1926, the Corn Belt Fair and Exposition Park, a $200,000 corporation, was formed last night when interested citizens met at the office of attorney Richard Dunn and prepared papers to be filed with the state of Illinois. Many McLean County residents have felt the need of a location near to Bloomington where the Corn Belt may hold its shows. 75 years ago, on July 22, 1951, The Mohawk Ladder, an historical romantic adventure by Noel B. Gerson, has been published. Mr. Gerson is the son-in-law of Mr. and Mrs. Ralph E. Hassenwinkle and the husband of the former Nancy Hassenwinkle, New York radio and stage actress. The Gersons are now living in Jamaica. 50 years ago, on July 22, 1976, one of the many vintage motorcycles that will be shown at the annual reunion of the Over the Hill Motorcyclists is owned by Gene Swanson. The machine, in working order, is a World War I Harley-Davidson that Swanson has restored. And 25 years ago today, July 22, 2001, while he's busy climbing Mount Rainier in Washington this week, Dick Smith of Normal may be winning a trip to Hawaii because he got caught in a hurricane last year in Belize and had the presence of mind to videotape it and have a little fun in the process. His video is one of three finalists in a National Weather Channel contest on personal weather stories. On all of our trips, we do little videos, said Smith, who owns Wild Country in Normal and leads adventure excursions to various places throughout the world. BPD to step up speeding enforcement. The Bloomington Police Department is joining a statewide effort to promote traffic safety on Illinois Speed Awareness Day, which is today. The department is participating in Illinois Speed Awareness Day in partnership with the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, with support from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Illinois Department of Transportation. More than 300 state, county, and local law enforcement agencies are participating in the campaign, which includes increased enforcement of speed limits to address a drastic increase in speed-related crashes, police said. The Illinois Speed Awareness Day campaign has a twofold approach to combine effective community outreach to roadway users on the importance of obeying the speed limit, along with an increased zero-tolerance enforcement effort, according to a news release from the Bloomington Police Department. IDOT notes speeding is involved in 4.9% of all motor vehicle fatalities, 36.3% of all injury crashes, and 31.1% of all roadway crashes. Food bank distribution. Eastern Illinois Food Bank will distribute food to local families facing food security in McLean County next month. Two distributions will be held Monday, August 24th from 10:15 to 11:15 at the Christ Community Church, 406 West 7th Street in Gridley, and from 12:45 to 1:45 p.m. at Allen Township Library, 116 West Main Street in Stanford. These distributions are sponsored by Compeer Financial. The distribution is part of Eastern Illinois Food Bank's Food Mobile Program, a system of mobile food pantries designed to help bring nutritious food to rural or underserved communities. Income guidelines apply. Visit eifoodbank.org/help/mobile for full distribution schedule. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half of the Pantograph for July 22nd, 2026. Please stay tuned.